This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If you have children born in the 21st century, there's a very good chance you know Mo Willems. Willems is prolific. He's acclaimed. Critics love him. Kids adore him. And parents do too. He's fast on his way to becoming what Dr. Seuss and Maurice Sendak were for previous generations. And among those many fans is The New Yorker's Rivka Galchin.
The first book of Mo's I came across was a gift. It was We Are in a Book! ! And my daughter was only 4 months old at the time. And there's something about when you're with a very young child, you're reading the same books over and over and over, and you start to understand it in a deeper way, which is not just a fantasy with Mo's books. There's just so much going on, even though the word count was probably, 71 words.
Willems has a background in TV, and his career as an author began with a book called Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus. That became a successful series, and so did the next series, Knuffle Bunny. But he really blew up with a book about an elephant named Gerald and a pig named Piggy. One book called Today I Will Fly, and then another and another, up to 25 books, when Willems finally retired the series last year.
My daughter always is like trying to hurry over to what she calls the silly part or the silliest page. Often there's several pages which are the silliest part or the silly page. And it's usually when one of the characters is in a sort of a state of agitation or out of control or says a word that's a very silly word or a silly phrase. So that's what she's always rushing to. One of the books that I've read the largest number of times due to audience demand is Should I Share My Ice Cream?
Sorry. Oh, look.
I know. Sorry.
This is no. This is actually awesome. To me, seeing really
completely
abused
books,
like, I mean, this has got, I don't even know what kind of stains on it, and it's beat in the corner, and whatnot. But this book has been loved and probably eaten off of at some point. All right. It's one of the great Greek questions. Epicurus asked it best. Should I share my ice cream? By me, Mo Willems. Ice Cream Penguin says, ice cream! Get your cold ice cream for a hot day. Oh boy, ice cream! One ice cream, please. He's wagging his tail, as elephants do. Here you go. Oh boy, oh boy! I love ice cream! Wait! Piggy loves ice cream, too. Piggy is my best friend. Should I share my ice cream with her? Should I share my awesome, yummy, sweet, super great, tasty, nice, cool ice cream? God,
that was so amazing.
There are some great stains in
never,
this book.
You should never, ever let an actor read your books.
Look at these stains.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Elephant and Piggy series, and if you could tell us a little bit about how you decided to end it. It was sort of like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar saying, all right, I'm stepping off the court. It's a difficult decision.
It's a freeing decision. For me, it was very freeing. Coming to that decision allowed every remaining book to be precious. I think that what I realized was that every time I was making an Elephant and Piggy book, I was not making something else.
Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit along those lines. Every year of your life for many years now, you've done a sketchbook, not to sell, not to make money from, but to send to friends and amuse them. To lose money for. And these sketchbooks are collections of cartoons, drawings, anecdotes that you put together almost like a Christmas card.
Right, exactly. And this year is, I think, the 23rd or the 24th year that I've done it. In the beginning, I did it to get work. And they were very sort of, you know, rejected New Yorker cartoons. And then they became narratives like Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus. And sometimes they became wordless and a little bit more serious. What I started to realize is that every year they are something that I am not allowed to do for work. I have to think outside of how I usually think. But it's only going to friends. So I don't—
It's a safe space.
It's a safe— There's something of like, here I am throwing some spaghetti on the wall. Anybody want spaghetti?
And you did do a sketchbook from your year in Paris. Can you tell us
This sketchbook about signage, retranslating signage, because it's like going to kindergarten. This is the thing. If you go to France for a year, even if you speak a little French, it's exactly like being a kindergartner. Every day you learn a whole bunch of new stuff. Every day there's basic signage that doesn't make sense that you have to decode. And every day you need a really long nap.
Right.
Because it's exhausting. And so I started taking pictures of funny signage and retranslating what it meant into larger jokes. And that sort of evolved. That was part of what became the Welcome Book, was the idea of trying to communicate the simplest ideas possible.
How did that connect to the book that is now the Welcome Book?
I think everything comes from a confluence. When people have children, and I really just on a business level encourage fertility in others, whenever a friend has a child, I will make a drawing, and usually it is an animal holding a sign saying, please enjoy your stay. And I started to realize, you know, there are just things you should say to a young child. And if the young child doesn't understand you yet, it doesn't matter. So you can be saying anything. So why not say the things you should say? And if you should say them, and you say them often enough, you might even begin to believe them.
And tell us about some of the things you say in the Welcome Book.
Well,
which I was speaking with a number of friends about which of your books make us cry, and we have to sort of cover up our snuffles when we read them to our children. And the Welcome Book is one of these two that just makes me cry.
It says that you have a heart. You should cry.
But it's I try and protect the little people.
They cry too. So it starts off with an image of basic signage, and says, thank you for joining us. Your arrival has been anxiously awaited. There were moments of fretting. There were moments of nervous anticipation. There were moments of dread. But now you have arrived. I am filled with joy that you are here with me while we read this book together. I'll skip ahead to, we regret to inform you, not everything is as it should be. There is unkindness and fighting and wastefulness and soggy toast. You will not be exempt from any of these things. There will be tears of sadness. There will be hurt. There will be spilled ice cream. Sorry.
You know, there's so much in there. And one thing that I admire in this book and in all your books is that it's not as if the world doesn't have disappointments, darkness, fear. And in a sense, I feel that children are always alert to that. They're very alert to those things, and you incorporate that.
I mean, you want to have a balance. If you're going to write the most core sort of fundamental things, you have to say there's great joy, there are people who are doing their best, and there are horrible things. It would be unfair not to say that, because then what happens is some kid one day suddenly wakes up and, like, realizes the world is terrible. That's even worse, you know. There's a rule in comedy that you never write on the nose, which is you never say exactly what you mean. And that's, I've discovered over years that that's only partially true. You never write on the nose until it matters. You have to be face-to-face with, I love you. It's a hard thing to be face-to-face with. So this book, while it has little jokes and whatnot, it really is on the nose.
Often also with Elephant and Piggy, you were often it was conflict. Like just this morning, I was reading to my daughter, look at my new toy.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows that they're wrong and that the toy that Elephant thinks he broke that was Piggy's is meant to break and then snap back together. But she's just like overwhelmed with pleasure and titillated when she opens it because she knows that they're going to have a fight about this. And do you feel like you see an evolution along your books or even within Elephant and Piggy, what kind of conflicts you're drawn to? Because, for example, I felt that Elephant and Piggy, early on, there was a lot of kind of their intense need for each other and how vulnerable that makes you, especially how that's difficult for Gerald. And that as the books evolved, different kind of conflicts were able to move in because certain other conflicts had shifted away or I guess
well, they were taken. There was a point at which I really realized that these books were philosophical questions. And so I started reading more philosophy and becoming more interior about like what are the questions I have that I don't know the answers to.
Well, in fact, almost all of them I felt like could kind of be sort of tied to a text that is sort of a grown-up text, like, should I share my ice cream as an ethical test?
Yes, absolutely.
And it's sort of like Groundhog Day, and it's sort of engaging philosophically with every answer to the question of how can I be good?
And not only how can I be good, and I think the twist is, for me in that was, how can I be good is only one aspect of the question. The question is, when should I be good? And that's a much harder question to answer. We're doing this play that's – the play is touring of Elephant and Piggy. We are in a play. And one of the sections is should I share my ice cream? And he sings this song about being an ice cream hero. He has this great fantasy that just by deciding to share something, he will become such a hero. And he gets so self-involved that the ice cream melts.
And Piggy will be amazed to see my super-duper power generosity.
He's so nice!
I can see it clear as day. I'll turn to Piggy and I'll say, this is for you, here you go. Hope you like chocolate chip pistachio. Then, cause I'll have made her day, she'll turn to me and say, you're my hero.
You're my hero. Sing it for and for.
But early on when he says, should I share my ice cream? The actors have told me that when there are school groups visiting, the kids go, no.
They've answered that they know.
But when the grandparents are there at the public shows, they go, oh, yes, yes. Because they know.
That's so amazing. They know the context. They know who's listening.
They know if they're going to get ice cream afterwards or not by seeming to be generous. And I do remember one show where Gerald suddenly, the character, the actor says, that's it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to share my ice cream. And a kid way in the back just yelled out, you fool!
It's amazing.
The idea of it being a vaudevillian piece with lots of little sketches that add into something larger, the idea is that there's an emotional amplitude. So in the beginning, the crisis is, I can't find my friend. Oh, there my friend is. It's not so big. And it works its way up to sharing your ice cream or breaking your toy. And then when they realize that they are in a play and the play will end and the script, they literally have nothing left to say when the script is done.
It's like the end of Beckett. I've often thought We Are in a Book is basically Waiting for Godot.
Why not?
In a way that's accessible for children.
You know, the great thing about children's theater is that, I love Pirandello. I love Ionesco. Of course, that's what I'm going to be writing for. And my audience is too young to know that that's snobby in some way.
What surprises, I guess it doesn't work that way. What surprises can you see as you look forward?
Are you asking me what am I doing next?
I want to ask you the worst question possible.
Are you actually asking me what I want to do next?
It's like the We Are in a Book thing. I wanted to bring it to the top of the, to the top.
I mean, I feel like I'm going back and forth to discover where I am more comfortable, the types of stories that I want to tell. I feel very free, and that is part of the ending of the Elephant and Piggy series, that I can experiment. What are you working on next?
That's a terrible question. I know. I don't know. I'm not really one of those people who's very good at cracking open my ribs and showing my heart. But, you know, I have found that reading children's books has been, I haven't been as excited about literature since I was maybe 18 years old. And that reading and rereading, because I think that's what's so powerful about children's books. I don't read these books to my daughter. I read them 1,000 times. And it makes me have more respect for the kind of deep structural beauty that a lot of these books have. And so I don't know exactly what I'm working on, or maybe I do, but that's what is moving me. That's my intellectual food.
Well, you know, a great book you don't read, you live.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-bum.
Mo Willems talking with The New Yorker's Rivka Galchin. Her profile of Willems in The New Yorker is called Mo Willems' Funny Failures. You can find it at newyorkerradio.org.